We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There's so much information out there tailored towards service providers, so we've carved out a space just for you, the creative entrepreneur making and selling physical goods. We're firm believers that everyone has a story to share, and there is much that we can learn from each other's business journey. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, and welcome to Proof to Product. Today, I sat down with Donnie Paquin, the founder of Agapantha, a jewelry company that produces delicate layering pieces that are sold in boutiques around the world. Donnie has a fascinating story of starting Agapantha in 2004 while touring as a singer-songwriter. Her side hustle has blossomed into a successful business that recently celebrated its 15th year in business. On today's episode, Donnie shares how she has slowly and thoughtfully grown her jewelry line, how she has scaled production for a handmade product, and she encourages all of us to just keep going. Hi, Donnie. Welcome to Proof to Product.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
We are thrilled to have you. You have such a fascinating story. Tell everyone what you were doing before you started your jewelry company, Agapantha. Am I saying that right?
No. Agapantha.
I apologize. Agapantha. No, that's okay.
So I was a musician, a singer-songwriter, kind of girl and guitar, kind of exactly what you imagine for the late 90s and early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And I lived in San Francisco and New York, and I did that for about close to 7 years. And during that time, I started to get kind of burnt out on music. I was a little bit of an overachiever in terms of trying to book as many tours as possible, and I just got exhausted.
Yeah.
And also, doesn't pay very well, music. I don't know if you know that.
You know, being in Los Angeles, we do hear how the entertainment industry works, but I think it is so glamorized that people around the world don't really realize.
You know what? Listen, it was the most fun thing in the world. And I feel like I got to live that dream totally, but it doesn't pay at all. You know, you're working for tip jars most of the time. And wow. So I would book these tours where I would play a show, drive 12 hours, and then play a show the next day.
Wow.
And wasn't really giving myself a break and just got kind of exhausted.
Yeah, understandably so. How did you get into jewelry making? Was this something you did as a creative outlet?
So I'm not really sure how I initially got started doing jewelry. I know that I used to sort of play around in high school, and then in college, I knew enough to sell some jewelry at different events, things like that, but it was very kind of primitive beaded stuff.
Okay.
So at the sort of, I would say last year or so, two years maybe of my music career, I needed something in between tours to help pay the bills. And I found some jobs on Craigslist assembling jewelry for some other designers, and I really liked it. And I realized I was good at it. And so I sort of transitioned from working for these other designers into starting my own business.
Okay. Was it an informal apprenticeship in a way, and just that you were learning as you were doing it?
I mean, yes and no. It wasn't built that way.
Right.
But I certainly, one designer in particular, I learned a ton from, and I really honed my skills working with her.
Very nice. What was that process like for you making the shift? Was it a quick decision that you were going to move away from singing and songwriting to jewelry, or was it kind of a slower progression?
I would say that it was probably a bit of a slower progression. It took probably about a year and a half or so where I was still doing music and then also doing jewelry until I decided, hey, people want to pay for jewelry. This is amazing.
Yeah.
It's sort of that story that most designers have where I was making things and my friends were loving them and they were the first ones to start requesting, and it just sort of started rolling from there. And I had this other outlet of doing live shows and sometimes bringing the jewelry with me. And
yeah.
Then, you know, you weren't just buying a CD. Maybe you were leaving with a necklace also.
What an interesting concept. I hadn't even thought of that. But yeah, bringing the jewelry with you to the shows and setting up a pop-up shop there too.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, you have the space. Why not? Well, tell us about your work. How would you describe your jewelry?
It is delicate, modern layering jewelry. I like to think of it as everyday essentials. Most of it is very, very simple, minimalist. So you can kind of make it whatever you want it to be. It looks just as natural on a person with more conservative style mm-hmm. as it does on, you know, someone with the most eclectic taste.
Very cool. What inspires you when you're creating your work? What do you look for in terms of motivation and styling and all of the things?
So I'm going to answer that in a long way.
Feel free.
So agapanthas are flowers. Mm-hmm. And it is the first flower that my grandmother taught me to say when I was a little kid, because they're everywhere here in Southern California. So the company is named after her, in honor of her. And all of the different collections are named after different influential women in my life. And so each piece and each collection is actually inspired by a real person.
I love that.
Thanks.
So is that down to the materials you use, the style of the design, what types of pieces?
So the materials, the company has changed so much over the past 15 years. I used to do tons of wire wrapping and gemstones and things like that. About 4 years ago or so, I moved to really mostly just metals. And I have specific metals that I work with,
gotcha.
Generally sterling silver and gold fill and some 14 karat. So in terms of the materials, I'm kind of using the same sorts of materials. Sometimes the pieces are inspired directly by the person. And sometimes I create the piece and try to really figure out who it fits.
Okay. That was where I was heading next. Do you have something in mind before you design it that relates to the woman you're thinking of, or is it usually the other way around, but it sounds like a mix to you?
It's a mix. I would say probably more often I design something and then I figure out who it fits.
Mm-hmm.
Or okay. I may make some changes to it depending on that.
Awesome. How often are you releasing new products?
So I base my release of new products on some of the wholesale trade shows that I do. Mm-hmm. So I generally come out with two new collections a year, August and February.
Wintertime. Which shows are you doing?
I do pool trade show.
Okay.
Which is Heart of Magic in Las Vegas. I have done one with them in New York, and I've done a couple other shows here and there. I just did Las Vegas Market in February, which was great. So generally speaking, the shows are, you know, fall.
Right.
Winter, you know, you do it by seasonally, and I do it twice a year.
Cool. Yeah. A lot of my clients do those same shows, the winter and the summer shows, and, you know, they'll do two releases a year. Some will try to throw in another one or two in between those, but that's great to hear. So let's talk about your business model. When you were starting out, were you selling to both retail and wholesale sales channels?
I did start out right away trying to do both.
Okay.
But I would say for a long time, it was probably more primarily retail.
Okay.
Just because wholesale was harder. I didn't know how to do it. I was learning. I was literally walking into stores or cold calling, emailing, and just, you know, like throwing spaghetti against the wall and hoping something would stick.
Absolutely. What were some of the pain points that you experienced by trying to cater to both of those markets at the same time?
I mean, you know, it's hard to focus on one or the other when you're trying to do both. So you're just one person trying to do the job of, well, let's be real, we're all trying to do the job of about 1 million people.
right,
you know, in that case, you're not able to focus on retail or focus on wholesale. You're spreading yourself between the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so this is something I coach about a lot. And we talk about how the markets are so different. The customers are so different for each. The sales approach, the way you market the products, the timing in which you're marketing your products is so different too. So it is a challenge, not just for you, but for pretty much everyone listening to this podcast.
Absolutely.
I was just curious how you manage that. You mentioned that you're a one-person shop. Have you ever had people that, or maybe I misunderstood that.
Did I say that correctly? I was kind of speaking in the past tense. At this point, I do have a small staff. But when it comes to sales and things like that, it's still really all on me.
Yeah. That was something I was never comfortable giving up either when I had my product-based business, because I felt like it was so relationship heavy, and I wanted to make sure that I was nurturing those relationships and building them. I'm wondering if you feel the same.
I do feel the same. I have been trying really hard in the last few years to release some of that. I mean, I can't scale my business and still do everything myself.
Right.
And so I've been working really hard to find great people that I can trust and I can give things away and try to start focusing more on what I'm really good at and what I want to do.
I love that.
And that's still, I mean, that's a challenge. There's, you know, if I could hire 15 people right now, I'd hire 15 people, but I can't. So until that happens, I'll still be doing a ton of the stuff.
Absolutely. And there's times too, where even if we have a team, we still have to get our hands dirty and get, you know, it's still our company. We have to still do the work.
Yeah, and I want to.
Exactly. Exactly. So break down your team for us. Who do you have, not who specifically, but what roles do you have filled on your team?
Sure. So the most regular roles, I have two production assistants, one that is also in more of a production managerial role.
Okay.
And they both come in multiple times a week into the studio and, you know, they're able to be there without me. And they're doing as much work as possible because I can't do it myself. other than that, I have some other production people on contract that come and go. You know, I have a graphic designer and I have a bookkeeper and I have someone that comes in and does kind of more office stuff here and there. I did have an amazing right-hand woman for a while that was doing more business development stuff for me. And unfortunately for me, but fortunately for me, she just had her second baby. So she's out, but I'm hoping to bring her back on a project basis as soon as she's ready.
Good. Who was the first, what was the first role that you hired for?
Always production assistants. I've always had a production assistant of some kind for years, but really since I moved into the studio that I'm in now, which has been about 4 years, that's when I got more serious about having someone around all the time.
Yeah.
It used to just be send someone out, have them bring it back. Mm-hmm. And now I have company.
Now you're not alone. The people that are just starting out and needing production help, many of our audience are in that boat where they're sending stuff out. And then we have people that have full-time staff. So it's kind of a wide range. But I'm curious about how you made that jump from sending things out and maybe paying per piece or per hour and having people just bring the work back to having somebody full-time. What was kind of the thought process there? And what made you ultimately decide to have somebody coming into your studio and being there in a more regular capacity?
Sure. So I think from a practical point of view, one of the reasons is when you're doing metalsmithing, I wasn't finding enough people within the salary range that I was looking for that had a setup of their own.
Gotcha.
And so I needed to have people come into the studio and work there in order to for them to have all of the tools that they really needed.
Makes sense.
It was easier when I was doing wire wrapping stuff to send that out. But once we started to do more of the metalsmithing, I decided to bring people in, you know, and it was a really hard decision to make. I was so used to working by myself. And that's part of what we were talking about of, you know, starting to let things go. I mean, it took me a long time to even be okay with having someone in my space that I needed to talk to or felt like I had to entertain. That's a big change when you're used to working alone.
Well, and not to mention too, the schedule of it all. When it's just you, absolutely, you can pop in and out as you need to, weaving in personal things with business day things, you know.
Absolutely. As a working mom, you know, taking care of all the things I need to do and having that flexibility, you know, what that's turned into at this point is I have two people that I trust very much and they're at the studio without me much of the time.
Did you, at the beginning though, did you feel like you needed to be in the studio when they were in the studio?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And even when I hire someone new, because people do come and go, I feel like I need to be there for a while. I mean, you know, I'm leaving them in my studio with all of my things just to, you know, you got to know this person first.
Of course, you have to build the trust, but you also want to make sure they're doing a great job with the work they're doing. They need training and supervision. Like I totally get that. It's just fascinating to hear how you've grown it. I am curious, you are making all of your products in your studio, correct?
We make most of the products in the studio. At this point, we can't even handle some of the orders. So there are some pieces that I've started to have produced outside of the studio.
Okay.
That being said, it's still all the same kind of process that we would use. And as of now, that's all in Los Angeles still.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I guess where I was headed with this question is like, how do you scale that up? I know you've now kind of shifted your business model to be focused more on the wholesale side, although still doing retail. But, you know, that requires a higher volume of product coming through. And for such a delicate handmade item, how do you scale that production up?
Well, I started working with a production house based in LA, and they are now doing a handful of our rings. Mm-hmm. And we're starting there because the rings are my best sellers.
Okay.
So it is very exciting. Just on Monday, I received a giant box with tons of sterling silver rings that I had made, that I had designed. And that was really cool to see. Thank you. It is very exciting to receive a package with all of your designs just ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. So most of my clients and I came up in the paper world where it was like, you know, outsourcing was really scary to send my stuff off, but it's a different beast. You know, right. What you're talking about is truly handmade and you have your processes, but the paper stuff, we do most of that on the computer and then it goes to a printer, you know? So it's similar in that it's exciting to get that box and see your work in its final finished form. But I'm fascinated by your process because your product is more labor intensive than something I was doing.
It is very labor intensive. And I have chosen to work with a material that we're not able to reproduce in a casting process.
Okay.
So you can cast, which basically means there's one piece that is then reproduced. It's a whole wax casting process, but you can reproduce in sterling silver. You can reproduce in 14 karat. You can reproduce in brass, et cetera, but you cannot, you cannot cast gold fill, which is at this point the primary material that I work with.
Gotcha.
So I have made life very difficult for myself with that because every single gold fill piece has to be made by hand.
Right.
And we definitely sell more gold than silver.
Interesting.
So okay. I'm not quite sure what to do about that in the long term. I have been conceiving of for a long time having both a finer line and also a lesser price line.
Right.
Both of which could be mass produced.
Right, right. It's a fine balance. I feel like we get to this point, we start these things maybe from our kitchen tables or, you know, on the road as you were, as a side hustle. And it's like, we see the traction, we see the success, but we get to all these pivot points where we have to make tough decisions, but we want to maintain the integrity of the business and the reasons we started this business to begin with. And I feel like manufacturing is one of those big pivots, decisions. Like, it's an opportunity for growth, but it can be scary. And it sounds like you feel the same.
Yes, I absolutely feel the same. And you have to make a lot of choices along the way. Like, hey, do I want to stay small?
Right.
Or do I want to grow? And if I want to grow and scale, what does that mean? What does that look like? And what's really important to me? It's important to me that Agapantha, as it is a made in the USA company.
Yep.
Now, the lesser price line, that's not possible. And I'm okay with that.
Right.
And I wasn't always sure if I was okay with that, but I've come to the realization that, you know, thumbs up on that. If I want to scale and I want to like have a target line or something like that, you just can't produce that here in the United States.
Right.
And get a price point. You know, I'm in the midst of my first project where I'm manufacturing overseas for, a much larger scale project than we could do on our own here. And it's really exciting and really scary, but I feel like sort of a doorway into something new.
Yeah. Absolutely. I have a lot of clients that feel that same exact way. It's like both exhilarating and petrifying.
Anytime, and for anybody that's listening that has not yet worked with or has worked with a big box retailer or some larger company, the contracts are 700 pages long and they can charge back for anything. It's just...
Let alone the shipping requirements needs to arrive in this window. It needs to be packaged in this way. It needs to be ticketed in this way. Like it's insane.
My level of anxiety for the last 2 months has been through the roof. And this project is supposed to ship in about 3 weeks. I cannot wait.
You need to book a spa day for the next day after shipping out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, what has been the biggest lesson you've learned through the last 15 years of entrepreneurship?
Just keep going. There are so many times when I thought, gosh, it would be so great to just get a job and have a paycheck and, go home on a weekend and just like lay on the couch and watch television. Is that what people do?
I don't know. I haven't done that in so long. I don't know what people do.
But, every time I would have that thought, I would, be with it for a little while, maybe even look at some job openings, who knows. And ultimately always come back to how much I love what I do and that I don't want to do anything else.
Yeah.
And to just keep going one day at a time, one foot in front of the other, and do your best. And, there are jewelry companies that have been around for a year that have more success than I do, but I've gone slowly and I'm happy about that.
Yeah.
And to have that sustainability over this many years is an accomplishment of its own.
So, I was going to give you kudos about that. I don't know what the statistic is, but I did see something on Instagram the other day of like a very small percentage of business owners make it to the 5-year mark, let alone the 10-year mark. And then obviously an even smaller percentage to the 15-year. And that is a huge testament to you of one, that you did it in your own way. You clearly made pivots when you needed to make pivots, but you were very methodical, it sounds like, and thoughtful in your decision-making to stay true to who you are and what you want for your life. So one, congratulations on making it to 15 years.
Thank you so much.
I mean, is really something that should be celebrated. But then also you've done it in a way, I can see it, and I know our listeners can't see it, but I can see it in your face of how much you love your work and how you've intentionally made decisions along the way. And I think there's a lot of that slow growth we're talking about, that doesn't mean that it's not hard. It's still really hard. You're faced with decisions every day. But I guess one thing I'd like to ask you, over the span of 15 years, I know, because I know in my own business, I've made a ton of mistakes. I'm sure you've made mistakes over the years. Is there anything that stands out where you wish it felt like a mistake at the time, but in retrospect, maybe you feel like it's bolstered you to get to where you are today?
Well, I mean, so many mistakes. They all help you get where you are today. I mean, once you embrace making mistakes and failing, not as failure, but as an opportunity for growth, now I know what not to do. Now, right? You have to have those in order to go farther.
Yeah.
There's no way to do it without that. I can't really pinpoint one.
Well, and I didn't mean to put you on the spot but I mean, in looking back in my own business, there's things where I feel like, gosh, I didn't think I made the right decision, but now in retrospect, I realize that, entrepreneurship is very much a zigzag path, and those decisions, even though they didn't feel right in the moment, or I kind of regretted them in the moment, they did help me get to where I am today, and I learned a lesson through it.
I think this applies to most of the listeners as, starting out and working with wholesalers. When you're first starting out, you're like, I will take anyone that wants to carry my stuff. And I mean, I've been to small claims court a couple times. You don't want to just be in a store to be in a store. And that's very hard to get when you're starting out.
Yes.
But it's so true. You know what? If you meet someone and you have an instinct about them that you're not going to get paid or something's off, trust your instincts. don't be in a store just to be in a store because you will get burned.
I am over here with my head nodding yes emphatically. Like, I 100% agree with you. I think that's where it goes back to the intentional decision making, right? Like, knowing what you want your business to be, knowing how you want your business to support the lifestyle you want, and making choices based upon what's best for the business, but also what's best for you and honors your integrity too. So,
well, and to be clear, I still struggle with that same thing on maybe a different level.
Right.
But, you know, reading through a contract and oh, that doesn't make sense for me, but God, I really want to work with them. You right. know, you have to make that choice and you have to trust yourself that they are not the only game in town. If someone big is interested in you, if something, some great opportunity has presented itself, but it doesn't feel right or it doesn't look right, trust yourself and don't do it because someone else will come along that wants to work with you in a way that feels good to you.
100%. I would also tell people, negotiate. Everything is negotiable.
Absolutely negotiate.
So if they come at you with a price that's lower than you're willing to give, you know, go back to them with what you are willing to do, you know, and if it still doesn't work, then it's okay to walk away from it. You want to make sure that the decisions you're making are advantageous to your business.
So. Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I had a really great meeting with a big box retailer, but with their discount brand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I even flew out to New York for this meeting. And I couldn't have been more excited. And what I realized after I returned back and, you know, we went back and forth a few more times was, you know what? The things they want don't belong in a discount retailer. As right. much as I want to work with this name brand, this isn't it.
Yeah.
And I had to walk away. And I think I made the right choice.
It sounds like you did. Well, you know your worth and you know what you're willing to take. So just out of curiosity, have there been any trainings or resources or mentors that have helped you get to where you are today?
You know, always. But one in particular is actually my brother. And I'm super lucky to have him on my side. He is an entrepreneur himself and a businessman. And he has helped me so much with looking at my business from a totally different perspective. As you know, when you're first starting out, a lot of us are artists, right? We're artists and designers, and that doesn't mean you're a bad business person, but often it means that's not what we're focusing on. And now he is 100% a businessman. So he has taught me about running, and he continues to teach me about what running a business means.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, I'm just eternally grateful. I have him and I have another friend that he works with as well. And they have just been incredible.
It's always nice to have an outside perspective weighing in on your business decisions as well, because also it's so personal to you. It's so close to you and it is your art. So yeah.
You know, I still call him and say like, hey, guess what, you know, they ordered this much. They ordered. And finally I realized I can't wait to not call you. Because it's just so normal that I don't have to call you every time.
But you're celebrating too. And I'm yes, sure he yes. would like to celebrate with you.
So. Definitely.
That's awesome. You know, knowing all that you know now about starting and running and building this business over the last 15 years, if you could go back in time, what advice would you give yourself when you were starting out?
I think it's a lot of what we just talked about. Know that it's okay to say no to some things that don't feel right. Keep going. Or know when to quit.
Yeah, that's true too.
And trust that as well.
I love that. Those are all great pieces of advice. Well, where can people find you online to check out your jewelry or follow you on social media if they want to catch up with what you're doing?
Well, I would love for you all to come visit me. You can find us online at agapantha.com, which is AGAPANTHA. And you can find us on Instagram as well. At Agapantha Jewelry.
Awesome. We will be sure to include those links in our show notes for everyone that wants to find them. And Donnie, thank you so much for joining me today. It was really fun to hear your story and chat business with you.
Thank you so much. I love this.
Hey friends, registration for our next PaperCamp conference is now open. Whether you are brand new to business or you've dipped your toe into the wholesale world and want to see better results, this program is for you. We will walk you through every single detail of how to sell wholesale and exhibit at wholesale trade shows. This means that you'll build a business with a solid wholesale foundation. You'll come across polished and professional, and you'll make a great first impression with every buyer you meet. It's truly that simple. Don't wait. Join us September 19th and 20th in Los Angeles for PaperCamp. Head to prooftoproduct.com/PaperCamp to register. Thanks so much for spending time with us today. Head on over to prooftoproduct.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover free resources to help you build your product-based business. We'll be back next week with a new episode. Thanks again.